This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. It's time once again for the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and we got another host sitting across from me digitally, Mr. Jason Thibodeau. Is it Mr. Jason today?
No, actually, today is the first day of landscaping for the year for me.
That a boy.
I'm taking the teaching shirt off, and I'm getting the knuckles dirty. So
back to the dirty fingernails and landscaping. Oh.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, dude. Last year I was in really good shape when I went into work because just the way we were set up, you know, I was able to run on the treadmill and stuff. But like this year, I ran on Saturday, and I'll be honest with you, it was outside. It was the slowest time I've probably ran in about 4 years. And I'm not overweight. Like there, but I just like capacity wise in my lungs and stamina, I don't know if it's just from everything else or what, but man, I was not feeling it.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat as you. I've been struggling with a knee issue, and I'll be completely honest with you. I've been using that knee as an excuse to do all workouts lately.
Sure.
Right. I'm also in a period where my gym membership has run out, and this, athletic facility that my daughter goes to, it has a full weight room and exercise room, all these treadmills and stair steppers and weights and squat racks and everything like that, and parents are allowed to use it. So with the membership, so I'm kind of in this standby where I'm going to not have to pay for a gym membership, but I'm going to start paying for a wrestling membership, $200 a month for this wrestling membership, and parents get to use the weight room. So I'm going to drop my weight, my gym membership as well. So I got to figure out, cause I have my knee surgery this Wednesday.
Yeah. Right?
And then I'll be incapacitated for, I don't know, I've heard anywhere from 1 month to 3 months. Right. As far as walking without a cane or a crutch or a walker. And so I'm trying to figure all that out, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen the knee replacement stuff, and it goes, I think for a lot of people, it goes smoother and better than what it definitely used to. You know, I'm kind of in the same boat with a little bit of it because I've talked about it before where 3 years ago, I tore my quad. And so I'd got a checkup and everything with the doctor and done my yearly physical and stuff. And he's wanting me to push for an MRI, and he sent the referral over, and you know, the time frame of recovery on that's like 6 to 9 months, you know, because I mean, it's the biggest muscle in your body. And, and I'm like, dude, I don't know when I can do it. So, I mean, we're scheduling the MRI for this summer, and then I'm going to try to schedule surgery for some point in the middle or end of November. And hope that, you know, by springtime I'm good to go again. And it's crazy, but yeah, to that point, man, I was exhausted after my run. I was glad I did it, but then running's a love-hate relationship as it is. I used to love to do it, and I told my wife when I got done, I'm like, I just don't know if I love it anymore.
No, this is where I'm at. This is like real talk for a man. I used to be that guy, and this isn't to brag about anything. It's just what I really liked to do, and that was to lift heavy things, right? Yeah. And so I was at a point a couple of years ago, well, it was like 18 months ago, where I was like bench pressing close to 400 pounds. I was deadlifting like almost 500 pounds, squatting probably, I didn't really go heavy because I wasn't like really sure of myself.
Yeah.
But I was probably squatting close to 350, 400 if I, you know, if I really wanted to, and just crushed weights, like lift heavy, crush, you know, strength is what I was going for. And then I would go on my long weighted pack hikes and for, I know, some form of cardio. I didn't do a ton of cardio.
Right.
But then the knee hit, the shoulder hit all at the same time. And it all kind of just really, it was painful for me to lift.
Yeah.
And like, I think the term some of these people use is ego lifter. Have you ever heard that term?
Where
it's just like, just pushing heavy weights all the time. And that's what I love to do. That's what kind of workout I like to do. But my joints weren't keeping up with it. My wrists and my left shoulder and my right knee and my right hip. And I just couldn't do it anymore. Yeah. And so I went to the doctor, and the doctor very bluntly goes, dude, you have to change your workouts.
Yeah.
You have to do it, because I can't do any of that with a fake knee now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting in a state of realization lately about like life and what I can and can't do with this knee. And I'm sitting on like 10 preference points for Wyoming. And so what does that look like now in the next couple of years? But I keep going back to a story I heard about Bo Jackson, the football player from the 90s, where baseball player too. He blew his hip out, got a fake hip, and he still played in the NFL and baseball after that. And so I'm like, if Bo Jackson could do it, I could do it. Yeah. Right? Right? Well, he did it when he was in his 20s, and I'm here 45, you know, so I don't know, dude.
I mean, I think that's the mentality that you have to have if you don't want to just roll over and die. I mean,
exactly.
Those are your choices. You either get up and do it, or that's it. I mean, I was talking to my mom a little bit about her double knee replacement, you know, so she did one in November and then did the other one in January. And she's like, the doctor's telling me it'd be like 12 months before I'm normal again. And I'm like, 12 months, that's a long time, you know, and especially at 65 years old.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. But to the point, I mean, you get it done, you do it, and then you have the mindset that, you know, you're going to be better after that, I think is probably the key to it. So,
yeah. 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 And the thing about it is, you know, the doctor, I had to go in earlier this week for a whole bunch of like, pre-surgery workout or a pre-surgery screening, and where they did some, they took a look at the knee. I thought they were going to do some x-rays. They ended up not doing that, but, a whole bunch of different things. Right. And so I'm talking to the physical therapist about what I can and cannot do. And I had one thing. I go, if I work out hard, or if I train this knee the right way, can I climb a tree stand by October? And she's like, I think, yeah, if you take care of yourself and you do everything, you know, right, you should have no problem climbing a ladder or a tree stand. Now, I don't think she knows what a tree stand is and some of the trees that I'm trying to get into by October. But I feel like I'm going to have to do something between now or between the surgery to test myself, to see if I can put a lot of weight on one leg, like if I'm not favoring it. But for every person I've talked to who said, yeah, man, it's not good, there's another guy out there who goes, hey, man, I had a knee surgery at 45. I wish I would have done it at 40. My knee feels great now, and I'm back to normal. And so that's what I'm leaning on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there might be, to some capacity, you know, stuff that you can't do, but it's just limitations, and it's learning your limitations. I mean, obviously, you know what it's like to have, you know, four fingers on one hand, you know? So, I mean, you know that you can only pick your nose with those.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, that's it. So
I got to change it up to my pinky.
Let's give a shout out to Code Blue Sense. I was going through some of my hunting stuff, which you told me you went through a bunch of years too. So I obviously, you can see behind me, I don't have my deer heads up and everything. And as I'm making this transition, moving the office and the man cave and all that stuff, I stumbled upon a bunch of my sprays from Code Blue Sense, and a bunch of my rack rub stuff that I still have. And the guys, that stuff doesn't go bad. And I use it religiously year round. And I, right now I got a trail camera that fell down in the, that probably because we had so much snow and then it got hot and it just melted and it's on one of those sticks. And it made me think that, you know, I still need to get out there, still need to take the effort to, you know, obviously fix my camera, but then to apply the rack rub to my setups and stuff, because my cameras have been showing religious deer movement every day, hitting these scrapes because of using that. And it's, I think it's, there's a little bit more to it than just during the rut and using it as a signpost, but it's also like a communication form throughout the year for them. So for me personally, I switched everything over, like my body wash, my laundry detergent, and my sprays are all Code Blue Scents, and just the full line of stuff that they have to offer, I think is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I went out, I had my boy freshen up a couple of the ropes, from the Rope It Oat mock scrape kit, this weekend, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But this weekend I cleared and organized a lot of my hunting gear and equipment, and I got some other places that I want to hang some of these mock scrapes this year and really kind of set it up where I have these locations, right? And I want deer to come through, and I want deer to just stop for a minute to smell the scrape or the rub, you know, the rope hanging from the tree. And I don't know if I got a any type of scientific answer out of the guys at Code Blue, and I want to ask them this, but you would think a bright blue rope hanging from a tree would have the opposite effect of bringing deer in, like, because from my understanding, I've heard that deer can see versions of blue. Okay. Yep. I've heard that. Like,
yep.
maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, whatever the case is. But that just that didn't make sense to me. And I was like, oh man, maybe I should just put the rack rub on the tree branch and they'll just use a tree branch. Well, dude, I don't know what it is, but they come to that blue rope, and maybe it's because they see it and then they smell it and then they associate it with deer scent, and then they come into it all the time now. So yeah. I don't know why, but
I've used, you know, several different versions. I've used skinnier ropes. I've used thicker, like hemp looking ropes. I've used the blue ropes. I've used branches. I've used artificial branches. And honestly, the rope to me obviously holds the scent the best, you know, it absorbs it. And now as far as color wise, to me, it kind of makes sense for it to be blue because of having the scent on it, being able to see it, and then they know after days of going to it that, hey, that's where it's at. You know, it's almost like knowing where a hunter is sitting in his tree stand. You know, as soon as you pinpoint a hunter, oh, he's 15 foot up, you look, you walk out the same trail. Now, 3 days later, you're not walking out that same trail because you know that's there. But now this, I think, is actually a good thing. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, whether we know why or not, it's a pretty damn good product. So go check out CodeBlueScents.com, discount code HTH 20 for 20% off. All right. I want to elaborate on something you said there.
Yeah.
I know you're in like a transition stage with your house. Dude, I have a ton of hunting gear over the last 30 years that I've collected. And it was hard, honestly, but this weekend I did it took me Friday. I started Friday about noon, maybe 1 o'clock. I started the project half of Friday, all day Saturday, half of Sunday to clean out my garage, to get it where I wanted it to, like, dude, I have, after this podcast, I'm driving into town to the dump, and I'm going to make two trips. I got two truckloads worth of shit that I'm trying to get out. And I cleaned out, I threw away old hunting gear that was damaged. Like, oh, maybe I'll use this coat, and it had holes in the elbows or something like that. Trash. Right. Yeah. And I went through like this giant purge of all my hunting gear and equipment. And it felt pretty damn good to make the space in the garage and up in my loft here where I keep my other, all my hunting gear. Have you ever gone through like a hunting gear purge at all or anything like that?
I'm about to.
Yeah.
So we've had to do everything like systematically with this house just because of having all seven of us here. And then like yesterday, so I don't know if I've talked about it, but we got screwed out of like $3,000 in furniture.
Yep, you told me that.
Yeah. So we talked about that. Well, we had to go get furniture somewhere, right? Because this place is filed for bankruptcy and we're probably not getting our money back. And long story short, lawyers cost too much. And to represent myself is just spending more money and there's no hope with it right now. So we have to have furniture. So we went and picked out furniture, mattress and all that. Well, in order to do all that, I basically have to have the living room emptied so we can get the furniture in it. Well, the living room is where our bed is, where our office is, where all the deer heads were. The addition is like a 39 foot by 16 and a half foot addition. And so that's what the basement space is too. Well, in theory, it was going to be a man cave on half of it and a workout area on the other half. And just moving that stuff alone, I mean, I wouldn't call that necessarily a hunting purge because I'm not getting rid of shoulder mounts and euros and stuff, but I had to get the stuff up on the wall and start hanging stuff. So luckily part of the addition has 2x6 walls and I was able to start building walls. Well, I started moving totes and then this closet that my wife and I've been using temporarily for our clothes is sitting on the other side of my desk here. And now she emptied all of her stuff off of it. So now I can actually take that and rebuild it as my hunting closet.
Yeah.
In that process, yes, I'm going to start doing a hunting purge, but where I had so much of this stuff in storage in my basement, I'm starting to find stuff that like I don't use anymore. It's outdated. There's a ton of stuff that I'm gonna have to go through, but I have to get stuff moved first, and then I'm gonna do exactly what you know. But I'm gonna be doing a whole house purge. It is amazing. So this has been going on for 9 months basically, and for 9 months we've been dealing with a pregnant wife, dealing with house addition, but also living in and out of totes and trying to utilize this space. And now it's just like, if I haven't used it in 9 months, it's probably a reason. I don't need it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's the same thing. I had boxes of stuff that have been sitting in the same exact spot for over a year at least. And so I said to myself, dude, I don't even want to go through this box. Because if there's something in there that I really wanted, I would have used it. Right. And so I just opened it up, took a glance in it, threw it right in the trash.
Yeah.
Right. Most of it was old. Like I threw away a pair of boots that for some reason I was like, I better keep these boots just in case.
Yep.
And they had like eye hole or the loopholes or
broke.
All that broken, you know, just like the heel was coming off of the boot and I was like, trash it, dude. Yeah. I just went through this huge purge. I do have a couple more shelves full of like broadheads and like knives and ropes and like some saddle equipment and accessories that I haven't used. And I got to either throw it away or put free on it in a box and then put it on like Facebook Marketplace and just have someone come and grab it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I got that. I got,
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included. And billed separately. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
But I did, it was cool. I went and I found some other things that I was looking for that I, because of my disorganization, haven't found. But like, I have three bows and I'm like, why do I have three bows? Yeah. Right. I think I'm going to save one for my boy. I mean, it'll be another 5 years, 10 years before he can even pull it back. Yeah. So just in case, you know, it's a good bow. I got plenty of arrows, broadheads, like a whole bunch of different stuff that I've found. The one thing though that I need is a firearm safe or a firearm cabinet or something like that.
So
mine just are laying on a couch right now.
Yeah. So I was the guy that had multiple cases, and then I had one of those cheap like green ones. There's those tin ones with the you know, just the key lock, and I had that for years. Well, in the process of doing the addition, I told my wife, I said, with this man cave, I'd really like to find a safe at some point. We talked about it, and then as luck would have it, we caught one on clearance one day, and I'm like, boom, you know. So that was the first thing that actually got moved to the basement. And I just moved all the guns into the safe. It's not completely organized, but finally have, you know, a fireproof safe, a place to put important papers, you name it. And, and I mean, it's heavy as all get out, but I think they're definitely worth their weight in gold.
Yeah. Yep. Cause I have ammo all over the place. I have, you know, I'm not worried that my kids are going to pick up a gun, right? And I say that, that's not, I don't know if that's fair to say, but my kids, like I don't beat around the bush with guns.
Same.
Like, I tell them exactly how it is. You touch this, there's a chance you die, right? Like if you're not responsible with it, or you kill somebody else, right? Straight up blunt with them. And they know not to mess with that kind of stuff. I mean, it's not like I have a loaded weapon sitting on the table, like kitchen table, right? Nope. They're all in closets. The ammo is separate from the guns and that stuff. But it's something, firearm organization is like something I need to think about as well.
Well, and, I mean, you kind of brought up a really good point, like with the kids and stuff, you know, let's see how I gotta think about this. So me, my wife, my two kids, and then one of her daughters all have taken, obviously, a hunter safety course. And in that hunter safety course, you know, you learn about firearm safety and how to point and hold a gun and know and be on your target and everything. But, you know, we don't hear about that, like, as far as an educational tool in the teaching system, in the schools. You know, what would it hurt to have that, maybe even part of like a PE class or something, where for a week long in PE, we teach about firearm safety. We teach about maybe hunting and hunting ethics and just something related to that. And maybe we can catch some attention from some of these kids and eliminate some of the problem down the line.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And have you noticed that firearm safe or like hunter safety courses now are online?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I think the way I've understood it is you take the written part online, but then you still actually have to take a field course.
Okay. All right. So I don't know if my buddy had to. I think my buddy did it all online.
Well, if you know much about the hunter safety course, I mean, most of them are just a 2-day course, you know? Yeah. So I don't know how many people are going to learn a lot of safety in 2 days when, right. Yes, they have every action of gun, you know, whether it's a brake action or a pump action or, you know, if it's the muzzle loader or revolver, they yeah. have all those on display for you to, you know, grab, feel, and kind of go through the action of it. But where are they actually shooting these weapons? Where are they right. actually knowing the safety of them? And yeah. there's so many different safeties on guns and stuff too, that, I mean, some of them, like handguns, have trigger safeties, you know, some mm-hmm. of them, and there's another thing too, like we don't talk about it because we live in a right-handed person's world, but my kids are left eye dominant. So I'm teaching them how to shoot left-handed. Well, for them to shoot a right-handed pump action gun is ridiculous because it get ejected in their face. But
yeah.
Just little things like that I feel like would be so instrumental in this school system that, man, maybe we could just curve it just a little bit so there's not so much problem down the line.
Yeah. I will say this, with me not necessarily understanding, like, because I haven't taken any type of hunter safety class in however many years, right?
Right.
Like a long time. I think I took it when I was 14.
Right.
You know, so I'm 14 years old. It's 30 years later. 31 years later, and I appreciated the in-person 2-day class where me and a buddy went and we sat in a classroom at a community college. They ran through they didn't really go into gun safety per se.
Right.
As far as this is an automatic shotgun versus this is semi versus this is pump, they didn't do that. They showed us the different types of guns and where the safety mechanism was on it. But the thing that I took away from it the most was the action of it. Like, the instructor handed me a gun and said, "Now cross this fence." And like they brought a fake fence into the classroom. So yeah. you had to put it on safety.
Yep.
You had to either put it up, lean it against the fence, or slide it under and lay it down. Then you cross, you know, like going through that portion of it and always knowing what direction the barrel was facing.
Yep.
And so, okay, now you're with a buddy and now you hold the gun. And then you bring the gun to me, and maybe like one of the kids did a barrel sweep and it went across their partner. It's like, okay, stop a second. You just swept him. You forgot yep. to put your gun on safety, like that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Or, hey, did you know that you can't hunt 200 feet from a building or a road, or, you know, you can't shoot across roads? And then they went into the Iowa state specific rules and regulations of where you can and cannot hunt and shoot across roads. And you know, they even went into a little bit of times of year as far as hunting seasons and what is ethical. You know, they even kind of went into things like what is ethical versus what is legal. And things right. like that. If you have any questions, make sure. And then they had a conservation officer come in one day and talk yep. about what you should and should not do, what happened, like scenarios that they go through a lot to say, okay, if this happens, best case scenario, call a conservation officer and they'll come and they'll help you handle it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I took it and got certified, I don't know how many years ago, mm-hmm. you know, but I've also taken it many times after because of the kids and stuff and sat yeah. through it with them. And, you know, at the end of the day, they want everybody to get their hunter certificate, you know, so yep. whatever it takes, if they have to read you the questions and all that, they'll give you mm-hmm. the answers and so on and so forth. Each instructor teaches a little bit differently. So each yeah. instructor had something that I took away from each one of them. Well, for me, like you were saying, like crossing the fences and stuff. Part of that safety too is, like, you know, a lot of people don't know, like, when they can actually load their ammo and when it's safe to unload your ammo. I mean, tree stand safety isn't just about always wearing a safety harness. It's also about your weapon too, like a crossbow and when to discharge the bolt or when to at least remove the bolt, you know. Same thing with all that. And I just don't feel like we emphasize that stuff enough. So not only could we emphasize it and eliminate some hunting accidents that potentially happen, but also just regular street smarts as far as being in and around weapons in your home or your buddy's home or whatever. Yeah. If you see something unsafe, you'd know by the being taught that. And it's probably part of the system that we just lack as Americans, that we fail to teach ourselves, and then we learn the hard way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've heard stories of guys blowing a foot off because they put their gun in, you know, just little lack of, I actually did a podcast several years ago about an LSU football player. I don't know if you remember that. He went on a duck hunt, and he put his gun down on a side-by-side. The dog jumped up on the side-by-side. He did not have his gun on safety. The dog jumped on the gun. The gun went off, hit him in the leg, and he had to have his leg amputated.
Oh.
Yep. So it's simple things like that that don't, you know, the safety, it's just a slight mishap.
Yep.
Right. And I find myself doing it sometimes too, where I'm chasing a gobbler and I'm just like, okay, I'm moving and shaking. Oh shit. I look down, my gun is off safety, and I'm like, let's get it back on and just like take a moment, be a very observant. And I'm that guy right now in my life, especially with my kids, where even with an unloaded, I know the gun is unloaded. I let them carry it in.
Right.
And I'm very critical. I'm like, all right, where did that barrel just go?
Yeah.
Okay. You point, you put it down and you looked over it. Right. Or you swiped it at my legs, something like that. Right. And so I'm getting them comfortable with the gun, but I'm also not like I'm not giving them a loaded weapon yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can remember my first, gosh, man, it was probably my first deer hunt with a 12 gauge. And I remember sitting in the tree and two bucks walking out in front of me. And I'm like, I'm shooting the second one, you know? So when he gets into frame or whatever, and I go to take the safety off, not knowing your firearm is so crucial as far as that goes too, because what did I do? I pushed it off. I popped it off. The deer heard the click and the safety going off, you know, instead of knowing my firearm, knowing how loud that safety is, I could have eased that safety across and made the shot. Instead, he spooked and, you know, they ran out of there. And I think that's a big thing too, with, like you were just saying, like walking in with the gun unloaded. You know how many times you walk in and the last thing you want to do when you get to your tree stand or in your tree stand is make a bunch of noise? Well, loading shells into a gun is noisy. And same thing at night when you're discharging. Well, you should technically wait till you're set in your stand to load. And then when you get, before you're getting down, discharge, you know, unload your gun.
Yeah.
But just little things, man. I think that's a great topic to think about, you know, especially as a new hunter, getting into it and learning your weapon, learning your firearm, learning your crossbow or your bow or whatever it may be. So that way there isn't a mishap or an accident.
Yep. Absolutely. That's something very important to me. Okay. Here's a question I want to ask you.
All right.
So this, my daughter has been turkey hunting now for 3 years. No, excuse me. Yeah, 3 years. This will be her third turkey season. Okay. She's intelligent. She's capable. She's strong enough to hold the gun by herself. She makes good decisions as far as, you know, like my boy, I was telling you about giving him the unloaded weapon and then and then seeing what he did with it and then having to educate him. I don't have to do that with my daughter anymore. Okay. Yeah. She's 13 years old. And I have a knee surgery in 2 days, right? She asked me, I go, do you still want to go turkey hunting this year? She's like, yeah, I do. And I said, okay, I'm going to have to, she's like, I said, we're got to find a flat place for me to park and then basically hobble in where I can sit in a chair or something, you know, to something to get me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Right.
And so, cause I'll have 2 weeks under my belt to where, I'll be healed enough. And I feel like I could get out there with some crutches and get the job done. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so my daughter's like, dad, just let me go by myself. And I'm like, well, by yourself, absolutely not. Right. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm not dropping you off in the woods and sitting in the truck. Like, you're not there yet. But I feel like if I let her go ahead of me 20, 30 yards and let her start making the decisions, like if I hear a turkey call, I'll loop around behind her, try to keep her within, like within some kind of range of the turkey. There's not going to be as much running and gunning, you know, that kind of stuff. But if I can get to a point where I can see her, but not necessarily be sitting right next to her. What do you think? Do you think your kids are ready at 13? How old is your oldest?
Well, my wife's oldest is 13. Then my daughter's 12. So she'll be 13 this year.
What do you think about those ages?
I was going to say our kids are very similar in age.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Like, I've seen how my daughter is. And I mean, we've finally gotten to the point the last couple of years where we can climb up into a tree stand instead of always having to sit like in a box blind or ground blind. As far as like the weapon safety, I think she did very well last fall with holding a crossbow by herself, you know, and taking the safety off and everything. And the crossbow is pretty heavy. I mean, the one that we have an older 10 point. As far as like the turkey, it would have to be a 20 gauge, you know, and the 20 gauge I got, I don't know if I'd have to get her a new gun. So, I mean, to me, she's still bow hunting if we turkey hunt. So that might be irrelevant, but as far as responsibility wise, man, they're not far off.
Yeah.
And I say that because you're probably in the same boat. I was so adamant on like our kids do not need phones, right?
Yeah.
I've been so adamant on them not having them just because I feel like you get super glued to it. Mm-hmm. And so my oldest bonus daughter just got her first cell phone. My daughter got it's one of those gizmo watches. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like a cell phone. And I'm set back by it because I didn't have my first phone until I was 18, you know? And so, I mean, responsibility wise, I guess if they can have a phone, maybe they can do some other stuff too, you know? But I think you have to, you know, see them do those responsibility things. Yep. You know, my stepkids, they're very good at doing all the chores that we ask of them. They're very responsible kids. So, yeah, I think they'd be okay. I really do.
See, I think a firearm is different. My first bow, this is crazy to think about this. I would never let my daughter or son in a tree stand without a safety harness on.
Same.
But when I was 12, I climbed up in a ladder stand and I sat down in a ladder stand with a bow and arrow with no safety harness.
Probably a homemade wooden stand.
And it wasn't homemade.
Oh.
But it was like a ladder stand from Farm King or Tyson's, you know. I can remember they cost like $40 or $50, right?
Yeah.
So you're trusting that with a kid in it. And I don't think anybody really knew any better. Because, you'd hear about somebody getting shot or you'd hear about someone falling out of a tree stand or something like that. But it was a big ladder stand with decent amount of room in it. You turn around, you sit down, you park your butt. You had your bow on your lap the whole time. when I started hunting, right? It's a little different now. But that's where it was when I started hunting compared to where it is now, where we have all the technologies, you know, and trees. Like, I know from a gear standpoint, I'm going to have to upgrade a couple ladder stand, like to get some ladder stands to get my kids up in a tree, because they're not going to be able to get into those alternating foot lone wolves that I have set up.
No.
Right.
No,
unless I have like six sticks just stacked right on top of each other.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to get into that. So
go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I need the double peg sticks, or I need the ladder stands or something.
Yeah, I think that's one of the safest things for a kid is a ladder stand. Matter of fact, we use a lot of the buddy stands, so that way I can still sit with them, you know, and they have the shooting rail that you can leave on there and everything or flip behind you. There's more safety in it. But I mean, like, to your point, I don't know, I'm ashamed to say it, really. Like, I don't know when I started wearing a safety harness, be honest with you. I mean, I hunted for many years out of many homemade wooden nailed to the tree stand, you know, and the safety of that, man, I would never let my kid do that. So I'm going to go back a little bit with what I was saying. Like, as far as my kid hunting alone versus like hunting alone with a gun, there's two different things to me. Like, my daughter can take her crossbow and she can still be in distance that I can see her and I feel comfortable with that. Now, to her be 100 yards down and I can still kind of see her and she's got a gun, I don't know. I'm still a little, maybe a year or two, right?
Yeah. I think if I was able to set her up on the tree and then leave, because that's when I was a kid, that's what would happen. My mom or my stepdad would walk me to the tree and then they would leave and go somewhere else. They'd get me up in the tree. I'd sit down, I'd turn around. They said, "Are you good?" I'm good. And then they would go away somewhere else. Right. And so I'm just kind of, you know, it's going to have to be like a trial and error thing, really, is what it's going to have to do. And to be honest with you, the only way you can really trust, obviously safety's first. Don't get me wrong. Safety's first. But the only way you can trust them is by doing it. And then it wasn't too far after, you know, like after that, where maybe I was 14, I was walking in the dark by myself to my tree stand by myself. And that's only 1 year older than my daughter is now.
Yep.
And so I don't know if she would be comfortable with that walking in the dark, but I can remember being freaked out of my mind walking in the woods as a 14 year old, like in the dark with some handheld flashlight that you got at Walmart, looking for the reflector on the trail so I could climb up to the ladder stand in the dark. And it was even at a different property. This was before cell phones. Yeah. And so as you stay here until you hear my truck horn, and then I'll come up.
Yeah.
You know,
We've got a 10-year-old girl and a 10-year-old boy, and so like my son and her daughter, if we were to give them a responsibility, they'll do the responsibility, right? But they're not necessarily going to go to the extra effort and like pick this or that up on the way to that responsibility. And so I think there is a transition definitely between being like 10 and 13, you know, but I also feel like there's a huge transition from 13 to 16. You know, so age-wise, I mean, they definitely mature, and a lot of it, I think, can be evaluated just by watching them with those tasks and responsibilities. And not only that, but the responsibility that they take of their own possessions, not just like a chore.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I feel that. I feel that. Yeah. So I'm trying to, I want to maybe test the waters with my daughter, and it's a pump shotgun. It's a, I'd give her a 20 gauge pump, and it has a red dot on it. So I feel like she's pretty responsible to be able to do that. Now, would I let my son do it right now? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
No.
Right. And would I let him if even the progression that he's on as a 13-year-old? Probably not. Probably just from a maturity level, probably not.
Well, so this is exactly what I was saying that. So my son's 10, and for the last two quarters of school, you know, they have to get these AR goals for reading, right? And a couple quarters ago, I said, you're not going to hit your goal, are you? Nope, not going to hit it. And I'm like, why not? Because you're not doing it. You got to do the reading on your own. I'm not reading the book for you. Yeah. And so I finally got a little irritated last quarter, and I said, dude, that's it. Like, you need to promise me you're getting this AR goal. Otherwise, I'm going to have to start taking either something away or we're cutting something out, because I do above and beyond what a lot of parents do. I give for you above and beyond. To me, when I ask you to do this, this isn't for me. This is for you, you know? So we went through this whole thing and the quarter just ended, you know, he didn't get his goal, right?
Yeah.
So I took his tablet, I took his TV away, and I'm like, now, what are we going to do different this time? And so this time we're going through the whole, man, he's like freaking out. He's reading books. He's right at my side. He's like, Dad, do you need anything? Dad, do you need help? Dad, do you need this? And it's great, right? But I also want it to be like a learning tool, you know, because like, it's not only just reading this book, but it's also later in life when you have to show up to work at 7 o'clock that, hey, maybe showing up at 10 to seven or quarter to seven is going to help you down the line instead of being like, oh, I don't feel like going to work or I'm showing up late.
Yeah. Yep. So. Yep. Absolutely. Lots to think about this time of year. Like I'll be honest, man, I'm not even in deer mode right now.
No.
I got closer to my goal last week of setting up the tree stand, moving the tree stands, getting things in position for next, you know, this upcoming season. I'll probably make a trip here once I don't need to walk with a crutch. I'll probably make another trip down to the farms to get some trail cameras set up, freshen up some scrapes, freshen up some mineral, and just kind of maybe spray, get some Roundup and spray around where my trail cameras are at so the weeds don't grow in front of them. But outside of that, I'm just trying to prepare myself for this knee surgery, for the real world that's happening right now. I have a lot of travel in my future in the next, you know, couple months. And deer, honestly, I've been on the back burner, and they'll probably remain. It sucks to say it, but it's not going to affect this podcast, but it sucks to say it. Like right now, I don't know a lot of guys who are gung-ho about deer hunting, especially now that green up starting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And the shed hunting aspect of it is over. The timber or the habitat improvements coming to an end, maybe some food plot season, which we're going to talk about in a couple weeks here.
Yeah.
But outside of that, man, I'm just kind of back burner and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a couple things that, you know, I saw a trail camera with a very nice buck, very big, big body. He's got some nice pedicles on him that are really started to pop open. So, I mean, the new growth is starting. But like this weekend, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the first weekend for youth turkey hunting here in Illinois. Yeah. And then it'll be next weekend, obviously. My kids have school this week, and then next week is their spring break. So it's a little bit different than yours. So, I mean, transition wise, we're not talking a lot of deer. My son and I went, you know, a little over a week ago. There is one farm that I would really like to get to with my neighbor over at one of the pieces I hunt. We just haven't made our schedules work. And so I still may have one shed hunt left in me, but starting work this week and then the house addition and the kid coming, there's just a lot, you know? So for me, the next couple of months are going to fly by. I hope that I can get in and do a little bit of habitat improvement yet, but also get my food plots in for the spring, work up some of the ground on the couple pieces that we can do stuff on. But yeah, outside of that, when the weather breaks and actually remains nice on a consistent basis, I think the thing I'd really like to do is go back to shooting my bow on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that. And that's something that I'm going to do. I think I'm going to grab a stool or a bucket and just sit on it and rip some 20-yard shots in the backyard, really. And that's it. So
Yeah, we always talk about those things that, like, I don't know, like de-escalate us or, you know, take us down a little bit. And I mean, archery has always been one of those things for me to where if I'm sitting in my basement or sitting outside, you know, I just plucking a couple arrows that there's something relaxing about it. It's the same thing with even like shooting a rifle or, you know, clay target shooting, you know, it's just relaxing.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. All right. So next week I want to play a game with you called What If? All right. Okay. And this will be a, here's an example. I don't want you to answer it now.
Okay.
But what if I said, Jason, let's go on a hunt this year. Where would you want to go? What would you want to do? It has to be whitetail. What are we doing? Right. So think about that between now and next week. And maybe in the next couple of years, we can plan a hunt together.
Okay. I got a couple questions then too. So, are you just asking me these what ifs or do I get to ask what ifs back?
You can ask what ifs back.
Okay. All right.
So
all right.
It will be, I'll ask you the what if question. We talk about it and then you go back to me and say, what if I have twins and all of a sudden and my life falls apart and I can't do shit.
I know. At this point, I don't know that my life's actually together. So, I mean,
it's just in a constant state of falling apart.
Well,
right?
We had this conversation last night. My wife and I did. She ran into another couple that, at a school function and they were doing a home remodel too. And they have, I think, three kids and they've been married for a few years, you know, so they were living in their grandparents' basement or her grandparents' basement while this remodel was going on. So they were asking my wife, like, how's your remodel going? And this and that. And so she tells them, well, Jason remodeled the whole house, you know, almost 10 years ago, but this addition part dealing with the contractor and stuff. Well, anyways, the long story short, they said, you know, financially is just a huge, I mean, burden, but it's so much stress with your spouse, just doing anything like that is a stress. Yeah. Well, it didn't dawn on me. I mean, obviously I knew it. I said to my wife, I was like, yeah, you moved in 9 months ago. We got married and got pregnant and did this addition. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to talk about doing some of the most stressful stuff? Like, so, dude, my life is not quote unquote together.
I love it. I love it. All right. Huge shout out to our partner at Code Blue Sense. Really appreciate what they're doing. Go check out CodeBlueSense.com. Check out our discount code HTH20 for 20% off. Other than that, everybody be safe. Enjoy your turkey seasons. We're going to have a really fun episode next week, so stay tuned for that. If you guys could do us a huge favor, go to Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. Give us a 5-star review. I really appreciate that. Also, go subscribe to the How to Hunt Deer YouTube channel. That's up and running if you like to watch your content there. Good vibes, everybody. Jason, have a good week, and we'll talk to you guys next time.